Good morning. I'm Paolo Santa Lucia from the Associated Press Television. I would like to ask to Director General if you can summarize which are the main new figures that we have in this year report, especially compared with last year, and also to Executive Director of WFP, if you can tell us which are the problems you are having now in the main areas of conflict in delivering also for security issues, in delivering food, and which are the main emergencies for you related to conflicts. Thank you.
Well, I would say that the main figures is that are that we have 200 million less unrest people nowadays compared when we started 1990s, and also the to be more precisely 209 million. We in the same period the prevalence of undernourished has followed globally by 18.7% to 11.3%, and from 23.4 to 13.5% in the developing countries. That is where we focus our monitoring system. As I said, out of 136 countries that FAO used to monitor, 63, almost half of them, have already achieved the Millennium Goals. We have also 11 that have been able to kept undernourished below 5%. That is the what is agreed to consider the achieved, the goal to eradicate hunger. And we also can say that are several countries in track to achieve the first Millennium Goals. Globally, we can do it if there is a push for that. We need to, as Jomu showed in the slides, we need to make a faster progress in reducing that. That's not a big push, but it needs to be focused on some specific areas. And I would like to highlight the sub-Saharan region and Western Asia. These are the two main areas that we have now to focus this additional push to achieve the Millennium Goals. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the question regarding where we are having the most challenges in conflict. What are the most challenges? The reality of it is where there is ongoing conflict and lack of respect for humanitarian actors, limiting our ability to reach those who are the victims of the conflict to provide the necessary assistance is the most difficult challenge to overcome. Whether it is in Syria or South Sudan or Central African Republic, ongoing conflict limits the humanitarian space that is available to support those who are trapped by the conflict. The second issue that is challenging our ability to meet the needs of those who are victims of conflict is, of course, financial. When you are looking at a conflict like Syria that is now well into its third year, since 2012, we are now expending over $34 million per week in order to reach the 4.3 million people inside Syria and the 1.8 million people outside Syria that we work to reach. That is a challenge for us because we are seeing fewer contributions and less contributions, not only to WFP, but to all the agencies that are working to address the food security needs of those who are impacted by the conflict. In addition, because of the increased amount that is being invested by the international community in these conflict areas and in the crisis points, we are seeing less money being invested in resilience building and the work that is required to move more of the countries out of hunger sustainably and durably that are not in conflict. So we need to increase the global partnership from the donor community and broaden the number of donors who are investing in the work of all of the agencies to ensure that we can reach those that are victims of conflict, as well as those who require our support to ensure that we achieve the Millennium Development Goals.
Thank you. Thank you. We are now going to go outside Rome. We were about to connect with Madagascar, but I can see that we are having some technical problems with Madagascar. I'm going to move to London, to Reuters, where I believe our colleague Chris Arsenal is already there. Chris, Reuters, London, you have the floor.
Thank you very much. There's a lot of good news in this report. I'm wondering how the dual challenges of climate change and population growth are going to affect predictions for the medium term, say for the next 15 years. How will these things play into forecasts, and how seriously could they derail efforts?
Well, in fact, climate change is already affecting the availability of food in many areas due to persistent droughts. Some of them, like Africa, in other areas, flood, like Asia. And this has increased the difficulty to access to food for the poor. Always the poor are the most affected by the impact of climate change, because they live on marginal areas, on the surroundings of the cities, and do not have the resources to access to food available. The main challenge I see is to adapt faster to these impacts of the climate change. Unfortunately, as Ekaterina has said, we are again neglecting the role of food in security issues. We believe that food is essential to have peace and to reduce conflicts. And unfortunately, countries are not paying the attention to that. And we are doing very little to adapt to climate change impact, especially because during the late 80s and 90s of last century, most of the countries have lost all the research institution and extension institution, particularly in developing countries, particularly in Africa and Latin America. So these need to be recovered, and these need a lot of investments to be able to adapt for the impacts of climate change.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else wants to add something from the podium? Otherwise,
Thank you. With respect to climate change, IFAD has a substantial program in adaptation to the effects of climate change for smallholders all over the world, focused, as the Director General of FAO has said, on marginal areas where the frequency of extreme climate events, whether temperature or precipitation, one way or the other, may be expected to rise in the near future, and where the long-term trends of adverse climate indices are likely to be worse. So we're investing, with producers' organizations, we're investing in better methods of capturing water, drought-tolerant seeds and other planting materials, better methods of planting and cultivating, investing in research that supports livestock and other investments that will allow farmers to adapt their systems of food production, income generation, to the immediate and longer-term effects of climate change.
Thank you. We are going to go now to Madrid, where I understand we have live the most important national radio en Madrid. Nicolás Castellano, entiendo que estamos en directo con la cadena SER.
Sí. Hola, Enrique. Buenos días. Saludos a todos los miembros del panel. Me gustaría hacer dos preguntas, una relacionada con el informe, en particular sobre el gran avance que ha experimentado América Latina. Me gustaría que el señor Graciano da Silva, que además fue responsable de un ministerio clave en Brasil y que dirigió la FAO en América Latina, nos hicieron una valoración de esa reducción tan importante del número de personas desnutridas en América Latina y Caribe. Esa sería la primera pregunta. Y la segunda pregunta, señor Graciano, ¿cree que es inevitable declarar la hambruna en Sudán del Sur con los indicadores que tenemos ahora mismo? Gracias.
Muchas gracias, Nicolás, y gracias por estar en directo en vuestro importante programa, director general.
De verdad, América Latina con Asia del Este y Asia del Sur son las tres regiones que han mostrado mayor progreso. El progreso de América Latina no es uniforme, como sabemos. Centroamérica y Caribe van más rezagados. Los mayores progresos son en América del Sur. Los países del Mercosur, más Perú, han mostrado notable reducción del número de desnutridos. Yo creo que particularmente hay tres elementos en Latinoamérica que corroboran lo que estamos diciendo para otras regiones del mundo. Primero, la decisión política. Todos los países desde el año 2009 han acordado en erradicar el hambre hasta 2025. Y muchos de los países ya han puesto en marcha leyes nacionales, de manera que es el derecho a la alimentación es una obligación del Estado en la región. Y eso ha asegurado que aun que cambie el gobierno, no se cambian las políticas. Hay una persistencia de las políticas y eso es clave. Hemos visto cambios de gobiernos en Brasil, cambios de gobierno en Argentina, en Chile, en Perú, sin que el compromiso con la erradicación del hambre y la reducción de la desnutrición fuera afectado. Un segundo elemento es que en la región combinan políticas de incremento productivo, con especial atención a la agricultura familiar, con políticas sociales. Esa combinación ha potencializado la reducción del hambre. La cobertura propiciada por programas de transferencia de ingresos, por ejemplo. Latinoamérica va con 120 millones de personas que reciben transferencia de ingresos a diario en la región. Eso da una amplia cobertura y apoyo a las políticas de la agricultura familiar, que son los responsables mayores por la producción de alimentos a nivel local. Hay un tercer elemento también en Latinoamérica, que es la coordinación de las políticas, y eso es muy importante. O sea, participan segmentos sociales, no gubernamentales, sector privado, sociedad civil y una fuerte coordinación intragubernamental. O sea, hay muchos ministerios involucrados con el tema del hambre y la desnutrición. Hay que asegurar una coordinación entre ellos. Y eso son estructuras que se ve en la mayoría de los gobiernos de la región. Hay programas especialmente dirigidos a la desnutrición infantil, como el comedores escolares, que ha progresado mucho y es uno de los responsables por la reducción de la subnutrición en niños menores de 5 años en la región. Sobre el tema de Sudán del Sur, es una buena ilustración del tema del conflicto y hambre. Sudán del Sur, usted sabe, es una región muy fértil, muy propicia, ha sido un país que nutría a otros con sus productos y por los conflictos que ha pasado, inclusive previo a su independencia, pero que se agravaron después, no logra producir más. Depende hoy de assistência humanitária. Quizá Hectarín pueda decirnos más, pero somos muy pesimistas con el camino que va tomando y la gravedad. Tenemos ahí millones de personas, no estamos hablando de miles de personas. Pero me gustaría que Hectarín pudiera, por favor.
Thank you very much, Director General. The reality of it is we, as a humanitarian and community, are working together to ensure that we don't, that we avoid a famine in South Sudan. And to date, because of the generosity of the international community and the impact of both the NGOs as well as the UN agencies and working together, we have averted a famine. But it is still very possible if we cannot reach, particularly in the three states that are impacted by the conflict, children who are the victims of this ongoing situation in South Sudan, where we are seeing a very challenging malnutrition numbers. We're addressing it today with the work of UNICEF, WFP, NGOs working together to provide the assistance that is necessary. But it is a crisis that continues to border on a potential tragedy that requires all of our attention. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cousin. Gracias, Nicolás. We are going to move now here into Rome. I can see one of our colleagues from Latin America. Here at the front, please. Can we have the microphone here? Thank you.
Sí, una pregunta al director general. Soy Mario Osorio de la Agencia de Noticias de México, Notimex. Quería preguntarle en relación al programa mexicano Cruzada contra el Hambre, donde usted estuvo en México cuando fue lanzado, se inspiró de alguna manera en el programa Fame Cero de Brasil. Quería preguntarle si tiene algún balance, si ha funcionado, si tiene datos sobre la eficacia o la ineficacia de este programa. Gracias.
No tenemos un balance del programa. Quedamos de hacerlo para el inicio del próximo año. Eso fue lo acordado con el presidente Peña Neto. Nuestra primera evaluación del programa era que primero estaba muy bien enfocado la cobertura de las municipalidades más pobres estaban contempladas, también había una muy buena interacción entre el gobierno federal y los gobiernos estaduales y municipales, lo que en México es vital. Eso es un tema en todos estados federados. La coordinación intragubernamental de distintos niveles es central para poder atacar el hambre, porque en general los recursos financieros están a nivel federal, pero es el gobierno local o el gobierno estadual que es el encargado de implementarlos. También debo decir que nos gusta mucho en México la participación de la sociedad civil y el sector privado en el programa. O sea, creo que tiene los elementos fundamentales y tiene la determinación política del presidente para que resulte muy bien en el avance. Gracias.
Thank you. We are going to have to go to Rome here. We have another question here in Rome before we go. I think Africa, the connection is correct now. The lady down at the back.
Hi, I'm Ayla Binney from Reuters, Rome. I have two questions. One is about the effect that lower global grain prices could have on global hunger in the foreseeable future. And the other one is about the wheat supply situation in Iraq with the advance of the Islamic State, if we see any, what kind of risks we see there.
Uh,
Sorry, because I didn't heard exactly the question, so Ekaterina was helping me. Lower prices. We have seen the last 6 months prices coming down. This is good news for the poor, not so good news for the farmers. This is the problem that we always had in the past. We have to say that low prices does not assure that the poor will get more food available. This is not automatic. We have been seeing prices coming down since the 70s, but the number of unnourished increasing in many areas. So if there is not something to give access of the poor, low prices will not be enough. It helps, but will not be enough. Related to the wheat, well, wheat is a crucial for the Arab states. All of them depend on wheat production and imports. And wheat is also, let's say, the most important symbol of hunger. Mm-hmm. Gandhi used to say that a hunger man, for him, God has the face of a bread. Whatever affect wheat, we have seen during the Arab Springs, will bring political tension in the countries. And this is a big concern, not only in Iraq, but the surrounding areas in Asia that is affected by the draw at this moment.
Thank you. Ms. Koshin, you want to add something?
Let me just add on the wheat challenge in Iraq and the potential impact on the public distribution system. The public distribution system today is not distributing grain, which is of significant concern to the, or should be of significant concern to all of us who are working to avoid a hunger challenge, not just by those affected in the areas that are now under the control of ISIS, but across the entire country. We're also concerned about the fact that IS has control of two of the major grain, PDS grain facilities in the country. So these are all very worrying trends that where you have a party that can control the food that is required by the poorest in the country and the impact that that has on the hunger trends in Iraq.
Thank you. We are already running a little bit out of time, but I'm going to try to go again to Madagascar, where I understand we have our colleague from the newsroom in the Mid-Madagascar newspaper, Mademoiselle Rosa Naivo. Vous avez la parole.
Mademoiselle Anne Zaha, oui.
Oui.
My question will be in French, it's okay?
Oui, oui, oui.
Yes. Alors, la solution contre la lutte contre l'insécurité alimentaire à Madagascar, donc, est-ce qu'elle ne devrait pas être accompagnée d'une formation d'agriculture pour les paysans, puisque depuis des années, on leur donne toujours des graines et pourtant, il y a toujours de l'insécurité alimentaire. Ma deuxième question. Les normes alimentaires en vigueur dans les pays développés entraînent des cultures intensives qui tarissent les ressources dans le monde et notamment dans les pays en développement, ce qui appauvrit encore plus les pays pauvres et qui accentue la malnutrition et pourtant ça crée du gâchis dans les pays développés. Est-ce qu'il n'y a pas une mesure qu'on devrait prendre face à cela? Merci.
Merci beaucoup, Mademoiselle Cousine. Did you manage to hear? Because it was difficult to get the connection. Or do we want one of the experts from FAO from the floor? Who?
Our economist here from WFP, he can speak specifically to the Madagascar study. Do you want to respond?
Please, join us at the podium. Here.
Good morning. My name is Arif Hussain. I'm chief economist of World Food Program. In terms of Madagascar, we have seen some positive developments. Also, I mean, after the political issues which were there, there has been some serious institutional changes, and things are on the improving side, in terms of having the right infrastructure, in terms of having the right policy framework, in terms of having the right type of regulatory framework. Doesn't mean that everything is solved, but it is slowly moving in that direction. The other thing which has recently happened, and it will be coming out relatively soon, which will shed more light in terms of what I'm saying, is our joint FAO-WFP Crop and Food Security Assessment Mission. The mission has been completed, but the report has been, in fact, the report has been finalized, and it is going through the clearing processes. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to have time for more two questions here in Rome, if we have somebody asking questions. If we don't have anybody, I'm going to have just the lady here. Come in, the microphone. Please identify yourself. Thank you.
Buongiorno, sono un giornalista dell'agenzia ANSA, mi chiamo Alessandra Moneti. La domanda è in particolare per il direttore del World Food Program. Nel difficile quadro della malnutrizione in Africa subsahariana si è aggiunto recentemente l'emergenza sanitaria di Ebola. Le agenzie di Roma hanno un piano di monitoraggio per questa crisi, quante persone riguarda, quali sono le forniture degli aiuti alimentari al momento?
Thank you very much. We have identified and developed a plan to reach 1.3 million people immediately in response to first those who are being treated by the health professionals in the three affected countries of Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea, as well as working to scale up as the isolation program is developed and implemented across the three countries in an attempt to ensure that those who are isolated for the purposes of identification and treatment of the virus also receive the food that is necessary. But what I must also stretch is the challenge that we are working with FAO to now assess and report on as we move forward and ultimately to address is the potential impact of this crisis on the food, the agricultural outputs of the three countries. And as a global community, as two agencies working together and with the countries that are affected, we don't yet know the full effect of the crisis. But what we must stress is that, yes, this is a health crisis that is evolving into a food security crisis in these countries. And so we must address the hunger and food assistance needs simultaneous with addressing the health challenges.